All right, I've got to get in 2 weeks of lessons in about 30 minutes. So I'm going to try my best to get it in. I have a whole page of notes, so hopefully it will work. I can get it in. It's been 2 weeks ago, I guess, since Rich taught, and we're in chapter 5 of Radical. Is where kind of our ideas are coming from tonight, but I mean today.
For a long lesson.
Yeah, a long lesson. Yeah. But basically, the point that he makes toward the end of chapter 4, it spends the chapter talking about God and the why of God. Why does God love us? Why does God do what he does for us? And then, what does God expect of us? And the conclusion that he comes to at the end of chapter 4, and then he moves over into chapter 5, is this. That God blesses us in this life so that we might show his glory to the world. So that through us, the world can see his glory. Through everything that we do, he gives us the jobs we have, he gives us the possessions we have, he puts us in the places that he puts us, so that whatever we do, we are to show his glory. And we do that in so many different ways. And in chapter 5, he starts out by saying, okay, we make that statement and we understand what that statement means and we think about it, but what does it really mean? What is the how of it? How do I, as an individual Christian, make the glory of God known in this world? And the point that he talks about is, he says, let's look at what Jesus did when he came to the world. What was Jesus' purpose? How did Jesus show God's glory to the world around him? And the point that he talks about how many churches we sit down and we think, well, how can we do this? How can this be accomplished? And we come up with all these grand schemes of how things can happen. You know, maybe if we build a bigger building, or maybe if we start this program or that program, or what if we try to start this kind of an evangelistic, you know, outreach or whatever. We come up with all these different strategies for how to do it. And he talks about how that Jesus' strategy was very simple. That when Jesus came to this world, he chose 12 men. And that's who he spent his time with. That he spent those 3.5 years training and discipling 12 guys. So that those 12 guys then would go out and would then disciple others. He said his method and his strategy was a very simple one. And that was, his strategy was to make disciples. And that through the lives of the people that he touched, that he would glorify God. We glorify God through our lives, and then we train others, we teach others how to glorify God through their lives. And that's what discipling, he says, is all about. So we've got a few passages. Matthew chapter 4, starting in verse 19. Matthew 4:19. He comes, and I'm trying to make the point that I just made by showing you kind of how Jesus started his ministry, and then how Jesus ended his ministry, and we're gonna, you know, we all, this is stuff that we already know, but I'm just trying to make the point here that he makes. Matthew 4, and let's start in 18. He says, as he was walking along the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who was called Peter, and his brother Andrew, and they were casting a net into the sea, since they were fishermen. Follow me, he said, and I will make you fish for people, or I will make you fishers of men. It says, immediately they left their nets and followed him. So Jesus' immediate plan, as soon as he walks up to these guys, they don't really know him that well. He doesn't really know them that well, other than he can read their hearts, but as far as his relationship with them is not all that strong at this point. And immediately he knows what his plan is for them. What are some things he could have said here? I'm going to make you fantastic speakers. I'm going to make you... he could have said all sorts of things here. You will be made famous throughout the world. You know, and that, which was true. It all happened. That happened. But he talks about that their role would be fishing for men, or discipling others. Now, one of the things that this is actually our theme for camp, and some of these ideas are going to be coming out through some of our lessons at camp. But he says this, I will make you fish for men. Okay, and he's just not saying that I will put my hand against your neck and you'll go do it, because I'm making you do it. What is he saying by that? What does the word make mean there?
He's actually going to teach them how.
Okay. He's going to equip them. He's going to show them how it's done. Who better to learn from, right, than the master? You know, the guy that is the best at everything. And so he says, right now, you're not able to do it, I think is the point. If I were to say, all right, go guys, go. Right at this moment. But what does he say? He didn't say go. What does he say? Follow. That's what a disciple is, right? Someone who learns from someone else. Someone who watches someone else in the practice of doing something. I'm a disciple of Rich. Okay? In that, as Rich goes around this building and he does stuff, I follow him around and I watch him. He didn't just, when we started building the classrooms back here, he didn't just say, okay guys, there's a bunch of drywall and there's some drywall mud. Now go. But it looks like that. It looks like that's what he said. Because the job that we did back there. Alright? But as we're going along, Rich is walking down the hallway and he's doing what? He's pointing out things that we're doing wrong. He's showing us up. He's like, guys, no, this is the way it's done. Here, take them to do like this. And so, that's exactly what Jesus is saying to his disciples. You're going to follow me around for 3 years. I'm going to invest 3.5 years in your lives. You are my project. You are the reason that I'm here. What would have happened if they had not learned? Didn't he invest? Didn't he invest a lot of, or didn't he take a big chance by investing so much of his energy and his time into discipling 12 guys who are pretty shoddy ragtag group, right? I think about, and again, Matt's already made this statement that I'm not Jesus, and I agree with that, by the way. What would happen if, when we came over here to Echo Hills and we started the REACH program, if we had not had people who were willing to work? I can assure you of this. This place would have closed down a long time ago if it were up to me. I was kind of the one that started it and had the idea for it, but if there had been people who had taught classes and who had done all the things that had been done, all the different aspects of what happens around here, if there were people willing to do it, then we'd be in trouble. REACH program would have crashed and burned long ago, wouldn't it? And it's that way with any type of thing when you're doing it as a group. With something, you just can't do it by yourself. I can't drive the bus and teach. I can do all those things, but I can't do them all at once. So you have to depend on people. And that's exactly what Jesus came to the earth. And I guess miraculously, Jesus could have preached to the entire world at one time, I guess. But instead, he chose to invest his time in the guys that would follow him. And so it's so important to understand that was his strategy from the very beginning. I'm going to teach you guys how to disciple. I can't disciple the entire world myself.
But at the same time, he was preaching to whoever would listen. And look at the result that happened that way. They went from praising him within a week's time, exalting him as the king, entering the city, just screaming, crucify him within a week. And yet they heard him speak and saw him do miracles for 3 years. Whenever he came through their town, they made sure they saw it. They heard it. So just speaking to him and preaching doesn't do it.
And here's the thing too, and we've learned this in our parable class on Wednesday night in the middle school class. Most of the time, he did not explain his parables to the people. Why? Who did he talk to?
Huh?
Who did he tell what it meant?
Well,
it's a handful of guys. When he's doing his deepest teaching, when he's doing the teaching that's the most practical, that makes the most sense, and he goes off and he says, "You will eat my flesh, you will drink my blood." Everybody's like, and then they put it. Here's what that means, guys. Why did he tell everybody? You know? Because he was invested in those guys. Right? He taught and he preached to everybody else, and they, like we said, they ended up, didn't understand, they ended up being killed. It's not about a guy standing up in front of 1,000 people and speaking. It's about someone one-on-one with someone, teaching them how to be a follower of Jesus. That's what it's all about. I probably can't remember a handful. I mean, went to Harding, for goodness sakes. How many speakers did we hear at Harding over 4 years? I can't remember probably a handful of them. If I went back and I really thought, and most of the ones I remember for the wrong reason, because they were terrible. Right? You remember how bad that one was, and you were just laughing at him the whole time. But, sorry.
Sorry, I thought it was.
Oh, you did? But it's not about sitting in a 3,000 seat auditorium hearing a dynamic speaker. That goes away. It's not about sitting in a classroom setting, even in a Bible class at Harding with a trained Bible teacher for 4 years. It's not about that. We forget that stuff, right? And we're not motivated by that. What are we motivated by? We're motivated by relationships. We're motivated by the one-on-one interactions with people. And that's exactly what Jesus understood. He stood on the Sermon on the Mount and he could preach to all those people and he could feed all those people and do all those things. But at the end, what did they actually get out of it? What did they actually hear? The Son of God, the greatest speaker that ever lived, and most of them didn't hear a word he said. What's the guy talking about? Like the guy we heard at the graduation yesterday. Everybody's going, "What is he talking about? He spoke for 30 minutes. I have no idea what he was talking about. It was terrible." But here's Jesus, okay, the best, and people are going away from their life. They were discouraged by his lessons. What is he talking about? I don't get it. He's supposed to be something great, and I don't even understand him. And his disciples are over there grumbling the same thing, right? What is Jesus talking about? Man, he's going off on us. And then Jesus pulls them aside and said, "Okay, here's what I meant." And they saw Jesus one-on-one. They saw him for the real person who he was, and that he lived life. He was for real. And that's exactly, I think, what people need to see in our lives. They need to see, as we are talking to them about Jesus, as we're discipling other people, we have to see, they have to see that in our lives, and that relationship is what helps that grow. You know, that's the whole foundation for reach. Is building relationships. People look at us and then say, "Well, you know, how many are you baptizing? Or how many of this and how many of that?" You know, it's not about that. It's about building a relationship with someone so that they will listen to me. Got a class full of teenagers in this room on Wednesday nights who it's taken years to build a relationship of trust with them that they will listen. That's because the girls in her class, she can talk about anything in there now. And they will listen to her. And they believe what she says. Now, they don't do it, but they believe it because of who Betsy is. They'll listen to what Jesus says. And that's exactly the way it is for us. And that's what the discipling process is all about. And sometimes we forget that. We turn it into some kind of a program, right? Something that we try to organize, and we try to, you go to that number of doors and you go to that number of doors. And that's not a bad thing. But how many times has that ever worked, Gary?
I think you can.
Two? I mean, or did we not over the course
oh,
of
gosh.
Several years? I mean, there was one city we knocked 8,000 doors in a week with our youth group, and I don't think a single person came to the gospel meeting because we knocked doors. And that was discouraging for them, for the kids, you know, and I guess I was used to it. But, you know, you always say, well, this brochure it's gold because it has the gospel in it. And somebody might be laid on their coffee table, and somebody picks it up, and they go, "Oh, what's this?" And they read it, and they might get interested. Now, how many times has that ever happened? But the point is, it's much more effective when the relationship is there, right? When there is a relationship between that's built as the discipling processes go.
Maybe that's why he chose fishermen. Because their expectations were not
Every cast, I'm going to catch something.
Could be.
Every time I throw out a net,
I'm not
going to get
it. It's one of my camp lessons. I'm
sorry. But, you know, if we go at it with the wrong expectations, we just know that we have to be the one that plants a seed.
That's
not
right.
The one that
exactly
nurtures
right.
It and makes it grow.
This is actually right.
And just to see...
Flip over to Matthew 17 as yours.
We had that one guy that came from the state of Florida that we had several of them that we door knocked, and he came and was baptized. You know, and we did a lot of door knocking, and you know, you really do want to see a lot more progress, but at the same time, we saw the best progress ever just for that one person to come. You know, and it goes back to me thinking about, you know, the 99, you know, he leaves those just to go find the one. And finally, the one comes back and, you know, he rejoiced. And, you know, yeah, it was rough up to that point because you're like, man, we've already done that for like 5 days. And, you know, maybe some of the kids come, but no adults. And then all of a sudden, you know, you can see a difference in that one person's life. And I think more of us wanted to go door knock some more after that, just to know that there would be one that could be saved.
Right. So that's true. You know, and I was thinking about it as you were saying that and I say this to the kids all the time, but a youth group only grows by word of mouth. It only grows by people saying, you know, we've got this class at church, or we've got this group at church, and I want you to come and be a part of it. You know how many brochures we've passed out? We've been in the community passing out for each in the last 5 years. Zero. Not a single one. So how do we fill our classes up with kids every week?
The bus is so
fantastic
intriguing.
Fantastic teachers, right? That's
the bus is so intriguing.
The bus. It's because kids invite their friends. I was talking to a lady the other night, and it says sometimes it's by accident, okay? I can't say it too much. So she thought we were another church. But they had done some door knocking, and she's like, she put her kids on the bus, and she said, "Now y'all are Fairfield Baptist, right?" And I said, "Yes, ma'am." I said, "No, but you know, we're right down the street, and we'd be happy to pick your kids up." And they've been coming ever since. The little curly headed boys.
Four of them in one time.
Some of it's accident, okay? But some of them, I talked to another lady, and she said, "That's all the moms and the kids talk about around here." I say something about, "What about, is there a church around here?" And they're like, "Oh, Echo Hills." They come, the bus comes through here, and our kids love going there. You know, it's just word of mouth. This is the way that it takes care of it. Matthew 17. I got to hurry. I'm sorry. I got a lot more to say than you. Jesus is not Matthew 17. I'm sorry, John 17.
I was wondering how you pulled that out.
Yeah, I was wondering myself. I had to move my marker.
Yeah.
Okay, and we're not going to actually read. We're not going to actually read this, but this is in the upper room. What is the context of John 17? John 17. What is the context? Jesus is with whom?
Jesus prays for himself.
Oh, thanks for reading it today. That's great. That's fantastic. that's a Harding student out there. Like Gospel of John class, I'm really impressed. Johnson, what's the context? Who's in the room with Jesus? His disciples. The 12. This is right around the time, this is right before he's going to be crucified, right around the time they've done the Last Supper, all that sort of thing. And then Jesus pulls his guys aside and he prays. What is Jesus' concern in the prayer? It's kind of like three sections, isn't it? He prays for himself. Then what is his concern? What is he most worried about?
That they be kept from the world.
Yeah, he's worried about his disciples. He's built such a relationship with them, such a close relationship with them, that's all he can think about. You know, he's about to go through the worst thing that any human being has ever gone through. And who's he concerned with? His disciples. For more than one reason. For one reason, he's concerned with it because He knows they are what he spent his time doing. If they fail, the whole plan's going to fall apart. But he prays for them, and he's concerned with them. He's concerned with what's going to happen to them, and he prays for their strength, prays that they will be unified, all those things that this prayer talks about. And then he prays for who? Then he's concerned about who? Us. The people that they will teach. He says, if this plan doesn't work, Lord, that you gave me, which obviously it will, but it has to work. I've done my job. Now I'm praying for my disciples who I've trained personally for all this time, and now I'm praying for those people who they will reach, and the people that they will reach, and the people that they will reach. You know, we're a result of those 12 guys preaching and teaching. And so he's concerned with it. And then he gets ready to leave. Go back to Matthew. Matthew 28:18. Everybody knows what this verse is. Getting ready to leave, and he says what? In verse 18. It's like this. Alright. I don't know at this time that they knew that he was gonna just float up in the air. Okay? He's been raised up, and it's like they're all there, and he says, alright, bring it in, guys. Bring it in. I'll talk about some stuff. Okay, well what are they expecting from him to say? I'm not sure exactly, you know. I don't know if they knew it would be his final things that he would be saying. But Jesus did. What's the most important point? What's the most important thing that I can say to them before I leave? And he says, go and make disciples of all nations. I don't think he was saying, sometimes we take this and we say, Jesus is commanding us. I don't think that was his point here.
No, actually, if you take 18 first and then go to 19.
All authority.
It makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. All authority has been given to me. Go therefore. Mm-hmm. Tell others.
Right.
You know, he's not telling them that you've got to. He's saying, explain that all authority's been given to me. And I'm going to give that to you.
Right. But then, think about this. The very first thing he said to them was what? I will make you fishers of men. And now what is he saying? Now it's time.
Go catch them.
It's your turn. And they go, okay, whatever, Jesus. And then, where are you going, man? Where are you going? Hey, don't leave us down here. You know? He knew they were ready. It's about like watching your daughter graduate high school. Sending her off to college. You know? It's like, dude, I hope I did a good enough job. You know? I hope I did the best job that I could possibly do. I hope she remembers all the stuff. I know she won't remember half of what I said. But you hope that you showed them a good enough example that they will go on and that they'll do what you hope they'll do, right? Even better things than you hope they'll do.
About the time she's 30 to remember most of
it. Yeah, probably. Yeah. Same to her own kids. So there's the whole concept that he says, I want you to do this. This is what you will do. I will make this happen. And then they get to the end and he says, okay, now it's time. And they have no clue, really. They're still, you know, confused and all that until the time comes when they do. I want to make just a couple of quick points before we quit. So his plan is, strategy is, go make disciples, baptize them, and then what does he say? And then teach them to observe all things. True discipleship is not easy. It's very relational. It's not mass produced. You go to a place and you preach the gospel, you know. Honestly, I think this is the reason. Okay. Sorry for any people who believe in faith only, okay? That's listening to this, which is probably nobody. But I think this is a reason that one of the reasons that Billy Graham teaches the type of lessons he did. Because it can be mass produced. Everybody out there want to be a Christian? Raise up your hand and say this prayer with me. That's not in the Bible, right? One of the cool things about this book is he basically says that. And there's another, his next book is even more pronounced in that he doesn't believe in that concept of evangelism, of salvation. And he's, I don't know exactly what his religion is, but most of the people, I think he comes from a faith-only background. But it's not a mass production, is it? Person just raises up their hand and says, okay, I want to be a Christian. And then they don't baptize them. They either, oh, go to a church sometime and get baptized, is what they usually say, right? Go later and be baptized. But it's not made that way. It's a one-on-one process. It's like, it's not a assembly line. You know, it's one of those places of mom and pop shop where they're putting the stuff together themselves. You know, which one's a whole lot better made? We know, don't we? We know which one's better made. The ones that are whittled by hand instead of some by some machine. They're also much more expensive, right? That's why mom and pop places are going out, because people don't want to spend the money for them. It's also not a quick process. It's not something that's quick. We go over to like Peru or somewhere and they preach and people are baptized, and then you find out, you go back the next time, and how many of those people are actually faithful? 15%? Maybe? And the reason is you go in there and you preach, and then you're like, be warm and be filled, and you leave. Right? Hope to see you next year. Well, they didn't get anything. All they got was the basic gospel. They decided to become a Christian, and then they got nothing. It's not a quick, discipling is not a quick process. And it's not all about putting a person in water. It's a lot more than that, isn't it? It's a lot more than just dumping somebody in water and say, okay, they're a Christian, let's move on somewhere else. Yeah, no, I'm move on somewhere else. Okay. All right.
No, I just want to see how much more I got.
Here's the, you can get all the time you want. Here's the basics of what he says. All right, number one. He says, I'm trying to get this in. It's going to be gone next week, and I want Rich to be able to move on to something else. First thing he says is go. And I'm telling you, in my experience, in my thought process, this is a lot the opposite of what most churches, the concept they have of evangelism. They put, come worship with us this Sunday on their sign. And that's their idea of evangelism. So you're just driving by, a person that has no Christian background at all, they're driving by the sign, they stop at the stop sign, and they go, hey, you know what? I think I'm going to go worship with them next Sunday. Who says that? But we've done our job because we put, we're open. Our doors are open and we invite anyone in to come to worship with us anytime.
Oh, but they have to be the part, though. They can't smell bad.
But the point is that in our mind's eye, we have everything set up for somebody to come in and hear the gospel. Everything's ready. We got a big building, and we can seat a bunch of people. We have, everything's comfortable. We can get everybody in here. And so if somebody will just walk through that door, we're ready. I'm on standby. I got my Bible. I'm ready. What a Bible study? Waiting for them to come through the door. That's not what he said. He said, we need to go. It's an intentional process of, and some versions even say, as you're going. As you're living your life, as you're going out into this world, we are teaching and we're preaching about Jesus through our lives and also through our words. He says, gospel living and speaking everywhere we go. That every part of my life is part of the discipling process. That I'm not like a Boston Movement person where I'm so pushy, or a Jehovah's Witness where I'm so pushy that nobody wants to have anything to do with me at work. They see me coming, they're like, oh, then hide. That's not the way it should be. They see a real, genuine life. And because of that, shouldn't they expect for me to want to talk about Jesus if I'm a Christian? I think, well, I don't want to impose on somebody. If I'm a Titans fan, people expect me to talk about the Titans, right? And here I am, I'm a follower of Jesus, a disciple of Jesus, and I'm afraid to tell anybody because I'm afraid of what they'll think. I'm not much of a follower of the Titans if I'm always talking about the Ravens. Or if I don't talk about him at all, what's your favorite football team? Well, I like the Titans. Of course, that's the way it is these days, right? Everybody's embarrassed to be a Titans fan. So the first thing he says is to go. Secondly, he says baptize. And we understand the importance of that. Why is baptism a part of the process? It takes away our sins. It identifies us with the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. And it gives us a public statement, a public commitment that I'm making. I'm standing up in front of people and I'm saying, this is what I'm doing. It's not something that's in my heart or in my head that I'm saying to myself. or some prayer that I recite in my brain that nobody ever hears, it's a public way of showing that I'm becoming a Christian. And then teach. And sometimes think this is teaching. This is part of teaching. But teaching is not just in the classroom. I learn best by hands-on training. I don't know about you. Some people don't. Some people learn better in lecture halls. I don't know who that is. But Rich can sit here all day and tell me the ins and outs of putting together a wall.
And we've tried.
And we've tried that. He even gives me a diagram sometimes. And I'm just like, I'm not sure. He goes, okay, take that nail, put it in that piece of wood. Ah, I can do that. Right? Okay, now put that up and do this and do that. Now that's all he does. Mainly. He sits in the chair and he tells me what to do.
Have the shower turned on.
But then, it's awesome. The other night, it was Rich was telling me, and then I was interpreting for Eric McKissick, who was helping too. And say, okay, Eric, put the level up. Put the level. And he'd be like, no. This way, Eric. This way. Oh. So he was teaching me, or reminding me, and then I was teaching Eric. And so now, a lot of times down here, in fact, Dominique was in here the other night, and he's like, how did you learn how to do all this? I said, Rich, by doing it. That's how you learn. And so teaching is that way. They see our life and they see the training that we've received training for those in our lives, and then we pass that training on. And people see something that's genuine. They see a real how-to. Is it better to sit in a class and teach somebody how to pray, or is it better to call them aside and actually pray with them? Is it better to teach somebody how to evangelize, or better to take somebody with you as you're evangelizing? And so the whole concept of this teaching is so important, and it's more than just sitting in a classroom and taking notes. It's about actually doing it. And that's what we've got to be doing out in our communities, out in with those that we build relationships with. There's a couple more points that he makes, and he asks these two questions. He says, am I a receiver or am I a reproducer? Do I receive the things that I get from someone else so that I use them in my own life, or do I receive them so that I can pass them on? Or he says, are we disinfecting or are we discipling? He talks about churches being a big place where people come and they sit and it's away from the world and I can cleanse myself off, I can sit there, or am I supposed to be going out of the world and changing people's hearts out there in the world? I had a lot more to say, but I'm going to quit. So, Rich will teach next week, so we'll have a big crowd here.
That is 2 weeks.
Basically, next week is
That is 2 weeks in a row. Pat, I'll be here.
I know. Next week is Memorial Day weekend, right? So, there's probably a few people off. Talk to people. Okay. No. I'm sorry, I went too far, too much. I went.